Yes, folks, Lightning Thursday is back on the radio, your community radio station, WTZQ. Lightning Thursday featuring Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. It's Thursday, which means the new Lightning is on the streets and is in your mailboxes. Good morning, Bill Moss. Great to have you back in the studio.
Good morning. Great to be back after like 3 weeks of hiatus in the last 5 weeks, I think it was.
Yes. You've had some Raleigh travels. There's been all kinds of things going on.
Yes. Well, more on that next week. We'll have some news from that.
Good.
But other news in this week's Fresh Off the Press.
Yes, sir.
Lightning and on the street, first light Wednesday morning and in your homes today, Lightning Thursday.
So let's talk about what's on the front page here, Bill. I'm curious. I'm very curious. Right here at the front page, headline, A Tall Tale. Where are we going with this
one,
Bill?
It is a tall tale. What we call the big, looks like about 60 or 72 point hammerhead there. A tall tale. And then there's an under subhead there that says 13 years ago, a proposed, you might recall, Mark, 13 years ago, a proposed high-rise project sparked a citizen uprising that ultimately defeated the planned luxury condos and capped building heights in downtown Hendersonville forever and ever.
Yes.
Protagonists included ardent preservationists, at least three council members ultimately, pro-development forces, the so-called Three Amigos, and a financier by the name of Donald J. Trump.
Aha. Uh-huh.
And people have forgotten.
People have forgotten.
A lot of those details, up to and including the now newsworthy, you might say, Donald J. Trump. But back then, I guess people were saying that there was collusion.
Yes.
and not just in that case. But no, that what we did was the context being, as we see in the story on the right rail there, in the right-hand column, that says Dogwood Lot proposal is unlike the 2006 Sunflower Saga, council members say. So context being, well, there's upcoming possible 5 to 6 story, but I don't know that people would call it a high rise, but let's say high rise to high rise, that might go up on the corner if the city council has its way. They've selected a developer to do it that would go up on the corner of, North Church and 4th, between 4th and 5th, by a developer called Blue Star Hospitality LLC out of Fletcher.
Yeah.
And this is likely to resurrect this debate over whether that's in scale or out of scale, whether that's the kind of thing we want. Maybe that is the place we want it versus right practically on Main Street. In this case, what we're talking about from 2006 was the Sunflower. So that's the context of this story. Like, this could happen again. What happened last time, and what were the issues, and how is that alike or different from what we confront now with the possible new Dogwood Lot Hotel?
So I love the fact that you're shining a light on this story for a couple of reasons, Bill. You mentioned a little while ago about how a lot of people have forgotten about that. But think about the people who have moved here since then, who didn't even know that had happened.
Well, that's exactly right. You know, I try to put myself in the shoes of readers whatever we report and however we report it. And that is one of the things I thought about, because one of the things we hear, and we get lots of news readers, whether they were non-readers, whether they read another daily newspaper. But one of the things we hear a lot is newcomers, because I think one thing that happens is before they ever move here, I think they discover HendersonvilleLightning.com, and they say, this little website, and we have a lot of traffic. This website seems to have a lot of local stories, and because of that, I think when they get here, they say, well, I can get a print copy of that. I want to take the Lightning. Or they see a new neighbor, and the neighbor says, well, take this Lightning. It has a lot of local news in it. So you're exactly right. We do think about I mean, who would think that, especially with that kicker about Donald Trump, who would think that this really happened in actually the pretty recent past? But it did, and as I, once again, our trademark long timeline shows on page 5, we detail the whole thing, actually going back to starting in 1905 with the Henderson County Courthouse, which was either the second, I think maybe even the third courthouse overall in the county, founded in 1838, but that one is the one that we now have and know and love on Main Street, the 1905 historic courthouse, designed by Richard Sharp Smith, not the architect of the Biltmore House, but the resident, ultimately the resident architect of the Biltmore House. After I'm forgetting the name of that architect, but when the architect of the Biltmore House died, George Washington Vanderbilt then had Richard Sharp Smith in town. He was an Englishman from the beginning, and Richard Sharp Smith was designing buildings elsewhere in the North Carolina mountains. And then we go to 1929, the Skyland Hotel, which also figures in this, and then particularly as well, then in 1987, we go to First Citizens Bank, and we talk about how tall those are and how there was actually a pushback and resistance after 1987 with First Citizens Bank, and people said, well, that seems kind of out of scale, out of character, it's not brick, it doesn't look historic. So as we try to say in all of our stories, we try to have historic context, and we try to say this isn't new, this is, you know, this is just more of the same, and that's one reason why we say it won't be new if it happens next week or next month or, you know, in the middle of the summer when we're having a debate over the new possible Dogwood Lot Hotel. So Steve Carriker, a key figure in one of the interviews, Jeff Collis, a key figure who we ran into him in the actual Grove Street courthouse, because he's a probation officer, quite a few weeks ago. We've been working and reporting on this story a long time. I said, Jeff, you remember that and I had already pulled all the meetings. Thank you very much, City Clerk Tammy Drake, for helping me with that. I had pulled like a stack this high. Listeners can't see that, I'm saying, about like an Encyclopedia Britannica worth of city council minutes. And I said, Jeff, you remember that meeting, that 6-hour meeting, because I had read this in the minutes when y'all first took up the Sunflower Project. He laughs and he says, yeah, it was my first meeting.
Oh.
6 hours long at the City Ops Center from 6 o'clock at night until 18 minutes after midnight, I think it was. Also, Mayor Greg Newman's first meeting.
Yeah.
Bill O'Kane, I think, was already on there. But anyway, long meeting, many more long meetings. This thing failed on a 2-2 vote, you might recall.
I remember it failing, but I didn't know how close it was.
And then ultimately, there was kind of a plan B by the supporters of it to not so much take up the Sunflower, later renamed and rebranded the Carolina Grand, and shortened from 9 stories to 7 stories. And they were going to, instead of just acting on that application by itself, they were just going to say, well, we're going to raise the height from 64 feet to 80 feet. And that's when Senator Tom Apodaca and Representative Carolyn Justice and other people sort of behind the scenes, well, not really, I mean, that were all constituents that were writing to them. That's when they put this referendum on the ballot, which passed by 68% to 32% to cap building heights at what it is now, 64 feet.
So what's all the hubbub about now? If the buildings have to be capped at 64 feet, this new hotel would have to be 64 feet or less. So what would be the problem?
Well, I'm not positive that there is hubbub, and we're not reporting in the story that there is hubbub. I know that not more than a week after the lightning first reported about the possible Dogwood Lot with a couple of different renderings. When we first reported that, I get not a call, not an email, not a text message, but an old-fashioned snail mail letter with our clip in it and just a note saying, this is terrible. you got to stop it, kind of thing. And I've had comments from some downtown folks as well that they are worried about parking. That's one of the issues. This is kind of aside from the height and the look of the facade,
right, the
whatever
aesthetic.
That might be.
Yeah.
So that's an issue. And even among council members who are in favor of it, one of the issues is, well, how does it look? The rendering, actually, of Blue Star, there were two, and one of them was probably more in character, you might say. I think it had brick. The Blue Star looked a little bit more like, in shorthand, what people say, something out on I-26. They don't want it to be
right.
Like a cookie cutter, and it's likely to be a brand chain.
Yeah.
The Blue Star works with Hilton. It works with it's one of the first thing it ever developed was a Holiday Inn Express. So it works with the hotel chains that one thinks of kind of as an architectural brand. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
So
yep.
The council wants to negotiate and really directed the administration, the city administration, to negotiate specifically what it's going to look like. So
yeah.
That we've yet to see. So when you say what's the issue, I think building height will be, to some people for sure, it still will be, even if it's under the 64 feet, because I think they're still, say, out of scale, not what we need in Hendersonville and so forth. But I think more than that, substantively, the council will say, well, let's make it in character as much as possible. And again, let's mention as well, let's make it like the old Hodgewell Hotel or the old Kentucky Home Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
As in our story, you'll see Mayor Barbara Vogt quoted as saying, it's really not right to say this is out of character or ahistorical. It's historical if you talk about Hendersonville back in the day being a place of several hotels and many boarding
right
houses.
Right downtown, exactly.
Either on Main Street or, as we've talked a lot before, back on 7th Avenue when the railroad station was disgorging hundreds of passengers and tourists.
And there was a hotel at one point on that Dogwood parking lot, exactly where we're talking about.
That was a Hodgewell.
Yes, yeah, the Hodgewell,
And there may have been, it had several other names, and I forget what they all are, and I wasn't able to report to the ground all of that hotel history. Stay tuned for that, because I'll probably come back and say, these were the hotels that were there. I mean, it was one hotel that was the same one that was rebranded several different times.
Sure, sure. And you mentioned about the people saying, you know, not here, we're not Asheville, all that sort of thing. Not just a letter to you, but you can tell just by your story online. Lots of comments.
Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's a good point. You see the Facebook based comments at the tail end of the story when people are already, you know, around here, they're ready to rise up against things that change. You know, what I call the no change no matter what ever crowd.
Right.
And we do have that.
Right. Absolutely. Folks, you're listening to Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. Lightning Thursdays here on theCUBE. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes.
This is Caroline from WAG, a unique pet boutique. The food that you feed your animals has a direct correlation to their health and longevity. Did you know that your pet's diet directly affects their behavior too? At WAG, we can help you tailor a meal plan designed around your pet's specific needs. We can order quality, healthful foods for your dog or cat. Remember, just like you, each of your pets is an individual. Let us at WAG help you find the perfect match for your four-legged family member. WAG, a unique pet boutique, 231 North Main Street, downtown Hendersonville.
Need new tires? Or not sure if you do? Stop by City Tire Service in Hendersonville. City Tire Service has been around since 1952. Shopping for tires can be confusing, so let City Tire Service help you select the right tire that fits your budget. And during the month of March, buy four new tires and get a free alignment. Call 692-8244 or stop in City Tire's new location with eGolf Mitsubishi on Spartanburg Highway. See you soon.
WTZQ supports Salon 2019, a fundraising event for the free clinics, Friday, April 26th at the Oriole Mill in Hendersonville. Salon is an evening of fine wine, local craft beer and cider, food, art and entertainment, engaging conversations, and a silent auction, all in a unique setting. The Free Clinics is a nonprofit that provides free healthcare services to those in need in our community. Secure your tickets for Salon 2019 at the Oriole Mill by visiting thefreeclinics.org and click Events.
Want a tasty treat but can't make up your mind? Come find your new delicious flavor it at Yogurt World on the busy bend of Canoga in Hendersonville. Open daily next to Hot Dog World, Yogurt World now has soft serve ice cream in vanilla, chocolate, and swirl with dipped cones. Yogurt World, a tasty and healthy treat. Try a new flavor it like salted caramel or mint chocolate chip. Add your choice of toppings in a delicious chocolate cup. It's Yogurt World. It's satisfying and delicious, and you really can eat the dishes.
And we are back with Lightning Thursdays with Bill Moss, editor and publisher of Hendersonville Lightning and HendersonvilleLightning.com. It's Thursday, which means the lightning is on the streets and it's in your mailboxes. All right, enough about hotels and change in downtown Hendersonville, Bill, although that will continue to be in the news. Let's go on to page two in a story that we touched on a bit, if I recall, a while back. The county commissioners, the board, assures Sheriff Griffin that it will pay for the 287G program.
Yeah, you're exactly right. We did cover this. We covered in the campaign of the Sheriff of Lowell Griffin versus then Sheriff Charlie McDonald, that Charlie McDonald had really, I think he actually inherited the 287G contract,
yep.
which was the ICE partnership and was a strong supporter of it, and that Lowell Griffin, who for a variety of reasons, one that he talks about a lot now being the cost and the burden on the local taxpayers, and the fact there's not a lot of vacant sales to put these detainer ICE figures in. So we talked about it then we talked about when there was a petition for him to drop it, and then, I'm not sure it was a petition, but a very lively, robust presence of folks that very strongly wanted the county commission to basically force Lowell Griffin to keep the 287G program. And so this is actually the next and so far last latest chapter in that, where county commission Commissioner Charlie Messer once asked for it to be on the agenda for discussion. It is on the agenda for discussion, and Associate Editor Nancy Wachlewek was there to cover that. Lots of details, lots of quote about what happened there. But basically, Lowell Griffin did say it that it costs a lot. He's still looking at it. He's looking at that contract, which expires on June 30th. And because of the cost reasons, he's not that confident that it's a good thing for the county. And commissioners basically said, no matter the cost, you should do it because we'll pay for it.
Yeah.
We'll pay for the increased cost. There was no price tag put on that, so far as I can tell. But it sounds to me like at least on that part of whatever budget Sheriff Griffin might submit, they're giving him as close as one can imagine to a blank check. So we'll see how that comes out. What I thought was interesting is that a pushback against this, more along the lines of those strongly favoring this ICE partnership, reverberated just this week in Raleigh, where the State House, I believe it was. I believe it was the State House or State House Committee. I'm forgetting which now. Voted really along party lines, I think it was. But they have a strong majority, of course. Republican-led effort to force those sheriffs that are trying to drop the 287G program and even pull back from some of the cooperation with ICE to try to force them to continue to cooperate in not so much rounding up, but with these detainers keeping in their jails so ICE can deport those that are charged with crimes. And they tend to, ICE says at least, it's not parking tickets or speeding tickets, but serious crimes, either that they were arrested for right now or that they have passed warrants for.
Uh-huh.
Those have occurred, those efforts by sheriffs have occurred in at least three large counties, I think Wake, Mecklenburg, and Buncombe County, and possibly even Guilford. I'm not sure about that. But you might recall in the 2018 election, you had big Democratic wins for sheriff in the urban counties.
Right.
They're switching some policies as a result. So we'll see more about that. If that goes forward in the North Carolina legislature, then that might make academic whatever discussion we have locally.
Right.
If all sheriffs are pretty much forced to cooperate with ICE.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but the reason why we're talking about this now like this is because if I remember correctly, there used to be federal funding for this program that is now gone.
He did talk. Yeah, a very good point. He talked about that. Commissioner Michael Edney kind of underscored that, and with sort of one of these, as usual, it's a bait and switch operation where here's the bait to cooperate with us, and we'll give you a good amount of money for every sale and for every deputy that you certify and train in this. And I think the story says there were five that are trained, and then suddenly they pull the funding out from under it, and they're looking at it like, okay, now the county property taxpayers have to foot the bill for this.
Right.
And that's really
right.
Lowell Griffin's a big point he makes.
Sure, sure. Let's continue on here and go into your local news section. Page 8, and we discussed this a little bit as well. If banned from Berkeley Road, big rigs could take four seasons. We talked a little bit about we've got rigs from Kimberly-Clark and so forth using Berkeley Road back there, and homeowners doing some complaining about the traffic.
Well, yeah, and this is also a follow-up. The second or third time we have visited the Berkeley Road. Well, it's not the first time. I mean, yeah, it's at least the third time, because this came up a few weeks ago, but that was after it came up a couple years ago when we first had the story, I think only in the Lightning, about big rigs from I-26 using Signal Hill Road and Berkeley Road and then Asheville Highway, or the other way around, to dodge the scale between the Asheville Highway Mountain Home exit and Four Seasons Boulevard. And more of the same, this advances the story a very slightly little bit, not a lot. In fact, I think the quote from the county commissioners is getting a little bit better, because the county commission, when they last took this up a month or two ago, said, we can't control much. We can't control the North Carolina Highway Patrol. We can't control the road because it's a state road and the rules along it. We can only make requests. But one thing we can request with a bit more authority, going back to a story we just talked about, is we can tell the sheriff to increase patrols out there. Apparently, they have done that. They think that's had a slight effect, but it seems like that might be kind of temporary and short term. And so they're really back to saying, should we ban? Can we ban heavy trucks? Can we ban tandem semis on that road? Well, that if you talk about heavy trucks of all kinds, they say, well, what about fire trucks and ambulances? If you talk about semis, they say, well, how is Balfour Mill, Kimberly-Clark, going to get their supplies and ship off their baby diaper material? So it's not an easy thing. Because roads in North Carolina aren't county roads. They're state roads or city roads.
So if they're not banned right now, what can increased deputy coverage do? You can't. I mean, if they're not banned, how do you... Do you see what my question is?
Yeah, it's a good point. I don't know. I don't know. And that hasn't come up. I don't know if suspected truck scale dodging is illegal or not. But I do think, and this might go beyond what the sheriff's more like what the highway patrol, I would think, would know the law. I suppose you could say, well, let's see your logbook and say, well, you're not delivering anywhere in Henderson County.
Right.
Why are you taking the long cut? And so I don't know. It's a good question. I'm not sure the answer to that, but it may be that, you know, word gets around, as we say in the old CB days, good buddy, in the convoy days, word would get around, and now it may be by text or just when they're at the truck stop. But maybe it's that. Maybe the truckers know that if they're going to get pulled over, they could be in big trouble for doing that.
All right. Interesting. Let's touch on this story if we could, because I didn't know anything about this until seeing this week's Lightning. In split vote, county retains current auditor. Was there an issue going on there?
There was an issue, and it was quite the issue. And it was we're told with some really good coverage. It's a pretty long story as well by Nancy Wachlowek, our associate editor who covered the county commission meeting last week when we were out of town. that this was the most discussed. Some other things, like we thought 287G and some other things on the agenda trying to forecast would trigger the most discussion. But this went on for a long time. And the issue is this. Commissioner Bill Lapsley thinks that Martin Starnes, which is the current incumbent and has been for about 10 years, county auditor, he doesn't have a problem with their work. He doesn't have a problem with their math, as far as I know. He doesn't have a problem with their knowledge of generally accepted accounting practices. But he does have a problem with how quickly they're able to complete these audits. And he thinks that the audit for, let's say, the upcoming audit for the year ending June 30th, 2019, he thinks really they ought to be able to have that by mid-October or so when they start, and they do start to begin to draft a budget, that they really should know, okay, how did we end the year? How much money do we really have in the bank? How much is our fund balance? How do we calculate how much debt capacity we have? All that stuff. He thinks it's too late to get that when they did, which I think was maybe the mid-January, either the early January or the mid-January meeting. I forget which. And he's also been on a campaign just to change for the sake of change, for the sake of new eyes, and to put it out. So they did put out RFPs. Lapsley's big problem with this situation was they put it out with RFPs after he thought the spirit, if not the letter of the motion, was put it out for a new request for proposals with the really the assurance that that we'll get a new auditor. And instead, county commissioners voted 4-1 after reviewing Martin Starnes and another one called Sherry Beckert out of Charlotte, I think it was. They decided to go with Martin Starnes to renew that contract with Martin Starnes. And he doesn't like that. He wants a new one.
And that's a multi-year contract, isn't it?
Yeah, it was a multi-year. I think it's three. It's in Read the Lightning to find out.
It's either three or four.
Yeah. So it is multi-year. So we'll see. I mean, we'll see. You might predict that they'll be a little bit swifter now in getting the work done, just because they've had this, they've survived.
Because they almost lost it. Yeah,
they've survived this dust up. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting. You also have a lot of local information going on about events that are happening. Can we also touch, because we talked about this a few weeks ago, the mock trial team from Hendersonville High School went on again for more competition in the state and got some more awards.
It did. It did do very well. The Hendersonville High School mock trial team, it finished fifth, but that turned out to be the highest rank among public high schools throughout all classifications.
And wow.
When you keep in mind that there are some pretty elite private schools competing, uh-huh. there are many, many bigger schools. They defeated J.H. Rose High School in Greenville. As I recall, that's a 4A school. It's a big high school. And lost to Village Christian Academy of Fayetteville by combined score on three ballots of 246-240. So they almost won in that second round, and I think that would have put them in the finals.
But, wow.
A great job by the Hendersonville High School mock trial team of Clara Hockenberry, Ellie Stout, Miriam Smith, Madeline Ball, Muriel Sauce, Martha Smith, Jay Mullinax, and Quinn Albert, coached by Jerry Smith and Catherine Wells. And this was the sixth team that Coach Jerry Smith has taken to the state finals.
Yeah, pretty exciting. Congratulations to them.
And that's the kind of community news that we have throughout the Lightning this week and every week.
Yep. Thank you for covering those stories. And we've just touched on it. There's plenty more in your Lightning, which is on the streets and in the mailboxes right now. Thank you again, Bill, for Lightning Thursdays. Tell people where they can pick up their copy of the Lightning and get even further behind the headlines.
Thank you for asking it. Any of the 60 Lightning orange racks all around Henderson County, or at our dealer partners, such as convenience stores, and among them, the new, not quite as new now, Publix supermarket. They're on Green Greenville Highway at Spartanburg Highway, or by going online at hendersonvillelightning.com and clicking on that red tab that says Appropriately Enough, Subscribe, which will walk you through how to join the growing legions of Lightning fans that get their Lightning today, Lightning Thursday. Or call Jan at 698-0407. Or best of all, come see us at 1111 Asheville Highway.